do yourself a favor and go to Brian's Instagram story.
Jason's covered it all.
Wussy from Boys in the Hood.
Hello and welcome. We're back from the BallerLifestyle.com. It's the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. My name is Brian Beckner. I'm the host of the show. Episode 319. If you can believe that, we're just cranking them out here every week. Every week, sometimes a couple a week. We're just keeping the ball rolling. We're quarantining right along with you guys. If you'd like to reach out, please do. If you want to react to something you hear today or something that's happening in the world, we're happy to listen here. You can leave us a voicemail. A lot of good voicemail callers these days. It's a high degree of difficulty, and a lot of people have really been able to step up the plate and distinguish themselves, which is impressive. The voicemail line is 949-464-8257. Reach us there, call, be brief, knock it out. Additionally, you can leave us an email. Send us an email, not leave, send. Mailbag at theballerlifestyle.com is the email address. We are up to 26 sponsors on our exclusive content link at redcircle.com. Somebody messaged me the other day and he's like, hey man, I want to do the blue square thing. redcircle.com. Just go to I pinned a link to the top of the website, theballerlifestyle.com. Go there. You can make a one-time donation or you can subscribe to the bonus content we do there, including recently, just last week, Ed and I reviewed Bloodsport, a movie I had never seen before. So, and it was pretty good review, in my opinion. I thought it went pretty well. So if you want to check that out, go to my Twitter at Brian Beckner. It's a pinned tweet. There's links there. Or just click on your phone right now, wherever you're listening to the show, and look at the episode notes on the show. You can click there. There's lots of different ways you can get to redcircle.com and subscribe to the show. And somebody was asking me, it's the same guy that said blue square. Our buddy Matty LeBront, he hit me up and he was like, yo, he's like, I'm going to do this blue square thing. I think it was in my Instagram. I'm going to see right now. And he's like, you know, it's about time. But he said something along the lines. He wants inside info. Oh, did I delete it? No. He said, he said, okay, I'm going to get down on the blue square deal, but I would like to hear the Patreon thievery story on a future episode. Possible. And I said, yeah, that's possible. And then he said, I just want your side. Don't need to exaggerate or dramatize. Well, that's not what I do. Nothing stopping the other person from telling their side of the story as well. I'm a high road guy. I'm going to be very fair, but eventually, maybe once we get to like 50 sponsors, so we're halfway there, 26 sponsors right now. And I can't thank you guys individually because they haven't provided me your names, your individual names. That's just, I don't know. They don't have that yet. But we're working with them because I want to say thank you to everybody that subscribes to the show on redcircle.com. I'm joined now, as I am each and every week, by Mr. Ed Daly. Ed, how are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing well. I got scared there because you said, I've even forgotten the Bloodsport, and you go, it was pretty good, and I thought you were going to say a pretty good movie.
Oh, no, it's horrible.
It was a pretty good review.
It's awful.
It's a martial arts movie that featured no martial arts, just slow motion.
Yeah, and it was like toes grazing across people's chins, and they were supposed to be.
But you would see like them throwing the punch, but then you'd see the slow motion of their shoulder as it's like going out. You didn't see any fighting.
Well, there were a couple kicks, but they were very obviously like not connected.
Oh, and the tall black guy walked into that one.
Yeah. I mean, it was the stunt coordination on that movie was so awful, but. That said, I sort of enjoyed, you know, sometimes you watch.
That was a fun, bad movie.
Yeah. Though. Sometimes you watch a bad movie and it's fun, like Bloodsport or Over the Top. Or sometimes you watch a bad movie and it's just horrible and puts you in a bad mood. Say, for instance, 1995's pandemic film Outbreak.
who suggested that one?
Speaking of that, we are joined now also by friend of the show, special guest. He's here a lot. He's a great guy. He does a great job. Of course, I am talking about our friend, Jason Stewart. Jason, what's up?
Hey, Jason.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Jason. Jay Stu. Wait, hold on. He's got Jay Stu. You got. Oh my
God. Is that mute? Is he muted?
He's muted himself.
Hello, everybody.
Oh my God, man.
Hey, let's clear the air about this.
I don't edit this. It's too much work to do all these edits with you jerking off in with your fucking mute turned on.
But we have to clear the air. I don't want to start this podcast off with a misrepresentation, okay?
Okay.
I remember about 18 months to 24 months ago, Brian came to Ed and me and said, let's do Outbreak.
No, I never said that. I've never seen that.
Hold on a second.
And
I want to clear the air. Hold on a second.
Also, is this a toddler?
You can't step on my version.
Who measures time in 18 to 24 months?
Exactly.
He's going to start throwing around Fortnite.
Yes. Yeah,
I specifically remember my answer when Brian said, let's review Outback. I said, Outback. Hold on a second.
Blue and Onion.
Yeah.
Hold on a sec. Let's not do a movie about a deadly virus until the world is actually facing the deadly virus.
Nice.
So it's good timing.
Yes. No, it's great. It's good timing.
I know what I will say. We'll get to it. But what I will say is as ridiculous. And this is like a dumb person's idea of a smart movie. But they do nail one aspect 100% correct. And we'll get to it later in the movie.
Oh, that just like one doctor can just go around and find the clues very easily and solve a pandemic by himself.
But there is something that totally nails what's going on now.
Okay, we can get to that.
I need to call you on the word pandemic. I mean, I think pandemic by definition is worldwide, like it's widespread. This basically happened in a village in Zaire, and then this town in Northern California that they never really put a name to.
Cedar Creek.
Yeah. But it's completely fictional.
Yeah. Fictitious town with lots of Mormon churches. Did you guys notice that? Lots of the Mormon spires in the background. Yeah.
Well, there's a ton of forestry, and that's a foreshadowing for one of my points that I'm going to get. There's just a ton of forestry.
Isn't forestry like the actual, like the job of working in the forest? I think you just mean there's just a ton of forest.
No, I used it correct.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought. All right. Yes, Ed?
Jason's covered it all.
Okay, that's good. I wanted to thank Ed. Ed sent me, I had forgotten, he asked me for my new address a few weeks ago, and he's like, I got something coming for you. It's no big deal. And then I'd forgotten, and then he texted me on Sunday, and he's like, hey, it's there. And I didn't even remember giving Ed my address. And I'm like, oh, my God, I hope you sent it to the right place.
This was like 2 months ago. I got a pop-up ad, and Big Brother is definitely watching and listening, because I got a pop-up ad after Brian and I talked about something. And so I just clicked, oh, sure, whatever, sent it. And then they're like, well, it's not being released until May. And then I got a notification. Like my Alexa lets me know when there's packages because they go into the downstairs of an apartment building. So you have to go get it.
Right.
And I got a notification. It was delivered. And I was like, what's delivered? I didn't have anything coming. And it said it was delivered to Brian Beckner.
Yeah, I made, and this is a real bummer because I don't, I've taken the Instasori song off of the play, off of the board here, or else I would play the Instastory song because I made an Instastory about, we'll just play Loudcomer instead. How about that?
Who's that Loudcomer?
I was actually a very Loudcomer when I got this gift.
Coming all over.
Because I was very excited about it. It's like a Guy Fieri. It's what you wouldn't call it a bobblehead because the head doesn't bobble, but it's kind of like that. It's like a little. It's like a Guy Fieri
caricature.
Yes, yes. It's like a Guy Fieri doll statue thing, and it's so cool. I'm looking at it right now. I threw it up on a shelf in my living room here at the Baller Lifestyle World headquarters, right next to my Hideo Nomo bobblehead.
Royalty.
Yeah. It's a place of honor in my home. So Ed, thank you very much for that. And Ed, appreciate your game because I made an Insta story again. It's my failure for not having the Insta story song right now. I made an Insta story in which I tagged Ed where I'm like, hey, look at this sweet thing that Ed Daly got me. And this fucking Ed guy's like, hey, did you tag me in something? Cause I didn't watch it. Never watches an Insta story. It's amazing.
It's going to take more.
Yeah. Ed, you got anything else to bring to the table before we get started?
I will give you a kind of a recommendation if you're in the mood for like just violent matching.
Always.
I watched that Liam Hemsworth Netflix movie. It was a lot of, he was just mashing people. It's like now Netflix, when you log in, it tells you the top 10 things.
Yep.
And there's a movie called Extraction, and he's just killing 50 people.
Oh, I'm into that.
The movie kicks ass. Like it's,
yeah, and like it's a fun, it's not like a bad.
No,
straight to video. It looks like a real action movie that you would just it's a popcorn, like just mash them up kind of movie.
I think it's like the producers of the Avengers, and it very much feels like a Captain America like action movie where he just kicks everybody's ass. Production value.
Oh, I'm gonna watch Extraction. It's called, right? Like
He's just mashing people, and he's enormous.
Chris Hemsworth is legitimately a huge dude.
I can't keep the Chris or Liam.
It's Chris.
But yeah, dude is huge, and he's just shooting people in the face with a pistol like 6 inches away from their face, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like you know when there are fights where you're punching him and then he gets the gun out and shoots him at point blank range.
Yes.
It's like that kind of stuff.
Oh, I'm into that. I'm gonna watch it.
And some of the stunts are like unbelievable because they have that filmmaking, like whatever the new technology, to where they make it look like it's just like a 20 minute long scene.
Yeah.
And he's just doing all these incredible stunts. I'm wondering how much of that was him.
Yes.
How much of the CGI?
It's pretty
good.
It looks good. It looks good.
Okay. I've already, don't tell me, I've already forgotten the name. And here's my two guesses. Enraptured.
You got one letter.
And Enchantment.
Extraction.
That's it. Extraction.
Vanilla extract.
Right. Extract. It's like when you get a tooth pulled.
The premise is he's pulling a kidnapped kid.
Yeah.
Out of
situation. Like give me back my son.
Man on fire.
Yes.
Kinda,
yes.
Like it's that type of thing. It's just super violent. Yes. Super violent.
Oh, I'm into that. Okay, we got Jason Stewart, special guest. Do you have anything you would like to bring to the table?
No, I'm looking forward to getting into this movie though because
you're the only one.
I think we could all agree. That it's just it's an awful movie.
It's horrible.
But I think where we disagree is I think it's bad good. There are just some ridiculous parts of this movie.
The casting is pretty crazy.
It is, yeah.
Four Oscar winners.
Yep. That is kind of crazy. Hold on. Let's go. We got a bunch of voicemails to get through. This is going to take a while. So there's a whole bunch. I haven't listened to them. I don't curate this.
Before we do, I just want to point out the director of this movie, or maybe even the writer, Wolfgang Peterson.
Yep.
He's had a crazy, weird career. He was at the helm of Troy, by the way.
Oh, is that the one you have on DVD?
Not me. That was written about you.
Oh, right. I thought you might have that one on DVD. Okay, let's check out these voicemails.
He's so easy to hate. Your time he likes to waste. His calls are far from great. His calls are far from great. He's such a stupid fuck. He seems down on his luck. His voicemails really suck. His voicemails really suck. No one's enjoying him. He's so annoying. Plus so fucking boring and worthless, but he's got nothing else to do. And he's even worse than Ish. His thoughts are useless shit. He's fat and got big tits. He's Manuel in Gardenia.
See, I'm looking at there's a bunch of voicemails here. 51 seconds, 42 seconds, 2 minutes, 14 seconds, 34 seconds, 2 minutes, 40 seconds, 51 seconds.
What?
It's a lot of people doing a really good job of being under 1 minute, which is a good amount of time to be. Let's listen to this first one. Oh, hold on.
Houston. Hey, I just want to let you guys know.
It's Drew in Houston. This guy's a good guy. Oh, my God. Oh, my fucking God. Just hold on. It's the touching.
Quarantining does not exist in Houston. Everything is open. It's been open for like a month. Nobody listens to shit. It's just it's a fucking disaster. Everything might as well open because everybody's out anyway. But the one cool thing about this whole thing is the best thing that's ever come out of this is our frozen margaritas to go from all the Mexican restaurants.
That is great.
I'm a full-fledged alcoholic now. I'm going to have to go quarantine at Betty Ford, I think, next. And it's not going to be pretty. The weight gain, the alcoholism, I really need to get this shit under control. But anyway, I hope you guys are doing well.
Oh, thanks for that, Drew.
I hear you. I had such an unhealthy August. See, that's how bad it is. Yeah. April, that I declared May is out. So I'm doing it inside and sober.
What do you mean May is out? You mean you're going
to... I'm not drinking.
You're not drinking for the month of May.
For the month of May.
Now, was it a change in the law that restaurants could serve liquor to go? Is that
That must be it, because I don't know of any restaurants in Hoboken that did that, and now they all do.
Yeah,
it's never been a thing. You just couldn't take a big gulp of vodka soda out of a restaurant, right?
Yeah, no. And I haven't done that. I have been getting a lot of takeout pizza. I ordered a pizza the other day, and I did that thing where I like tried to play the pizza places against each other, because one was taking so long to deliver, but they were both like stacked for like over an hour delivery. But I just been eating like shit, drinking, but I haven't done the to-go booze thing, and all the bars and restaurants here in my town do it. So I should probably patronize a few of those to try to just, you know, do my part. Okay. Here's another, this one's short.
Hey guys, C-Note here. First time call.
C-Note. This guy's, I believe this guy's,
he's a first-time caller, yeah, huh?
Dodger fan, California guy. I know this guy from Twitter.
On the last show, you guys were talking about the travails of trying to masturbate when you're married and have kids. Well, I think the sad flip side of that coin is that single people are just exponentially just jerking it, you know?
No self-control.
No dates to go on. No happy white Christmas memories to be made. Wow. I mean, it's kind of tough out there. But thanks to the age of Corona, I get to work from home, and I am high as fuck right now. 1:40 in the afternoon. All right, take care, guys.
I respect all that. I don't think I've masturbated during the quarantine. I'll be honest with you. I don't think I've had a single masturbatory session, but I've done all the other things. I've done everything else that he mentioned in tenfold. So
I think C-Note has been following me for a while on Twitter. He pops up on my mentions a lot. Yep. And the reason why I know that is because his Twitter profile thing is Oscar Gamble, or
yes,
it's one of the black guys from the '70s with a massive foot.
You're such a racist. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Oscar Gamble.
Yes, but I think so too. Yeah, I know C-Note. He's a good dude. Okay. Another, no. Okay. This is Manuel. We might not be able to get that. Recognize the number. He's a 310 guy.
Right. Right. Dex, easy. Edward. May Day on the front lines, May 1st, 2020. Just calling, hoping the whole Big Baller Lifestyle community is doing well. Just wanted to pose a simple question, man. Has anybody went through a more surreal month than April of 2020 with this pandemic, coronavirus, COVID-19 thing going on? Crazy, right? Amidst some of the low lights I've seen are bums literally just like screaming.
Bums? Yeah, we call those homeless. We call them homeless.
Bums?
Yeah, we don't call them bums.
The fuck year is it?
I know.
Their heads for no reason, chastising people, like feet away from cops. The cops not doing anything. Rampant speeding.
Cops got a hard job.
Like literally speeding again, right?
He's still mad about the speeding.
Loves that speeding.
I'm just, the freeways are wide open. It's great. There's nowhere to go, which is probably why. And also no one has a job anymore, which is probably why. But it's really like the freeways. It's next level. Okay. Let them go a little bit longer.
Anything craziness. Oh, and yesterday our dude Chilk Bra. Your Brian's personal friend, my personal friend, good dude.
Silk Eric
has now become Marcy. Narc Bra.
Yeah,
because he narked out.
So, Stu, did you see that Silk?
No.
He tweeted there were some people that had like set up a volleyball net.
How did I see that?
Yeah, in HB, I probably responded to it, and Silk. Like tweeted at the HBPD or something, and they're like,
"I saw that."
Yeah, I'm like, "Narc Bra," and they're like, "We're on it. Don't worry, we're taking care of it." And Silk took some heat for that, but Silk,
I respect it.
Yeah, me too. Silk was also down there doing some citizen journalism during the big national news, the HB protest. People wanting to. And the quarantine, they want to kill grandma while they still got a chance. Okay, another email here, or voicemail. Let's just get through these.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Whoa! It's Kyle and Scotty.
Oh, I miss him.
He's a farmer.
I love all you calls, but Kyle, it's been a while.
Well, it is kind of nice because I think we brought him up last week and we're like, haven't heard from old Kyle and Scotty.
I was worried he wasn't listening anymore.
And he called right in. Let's see what he has to say.
Yeah, quarantine life in small town Wisconsin. A lot of less people on roads. Shit, I don't know. Doesn't change for me. Got to feed the cows, got to feed the people.
Yep. That's what I always say.
I don't know. Still drinking PBRs like crazy.
Good for you.
Listening to you guys every week. You guys are fucking awesome.
Yep.
Keep up the good work.
Yep.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
Thanks for that, Kyle and Scotty. And Kyle, are you anywhere near, is it Manitowoc?
I didn't do it.
Where Stephen Avery definitely did that murder?
I would not want to be near the Avery clan.
No,
is that the was that the fifth starter for the Braves? Yeah, in the
also
mid-80s?
Him. Also him. He's not the one that did the murder, though.
No, it's that was more of a Smoltz kind of thing. Yeah, I would think.
No, Maddox, of course, the professor. He's the most murdery of all that Braves starter.
Oh my five. God! Jeff. By the way, this is just a random baseball fact that has nothing to do with anything. Jeff Perlman, our friend of the show.
Sure.
He wrote. he sent out a tweet like yesterday or this morning talking about Julio Franco. And he said there was like a rain out or something. They're just messing around. And he got the pitching machine up to 130 and stood like 10 feet in front of it and just was hitting no problem.
Shut up. Shut up. I'd like to see tape of that. Like
that would be awesome.
Julio Franco played into his 50s.
And think about the fact that he had that weird stance. So he had to have good bat speed just getting to that point.
Right. And my dude.
So 130.
Yeah. It's crazy. My dude was in good shape.
That guy was, I want to say he was yoked before steroids, but maybe not. Canseco got to those Rangers teams early.
Well, you know,
he was an 80s player too. He was like Indians, right?
I don't remember him being, maybe he was strong back then, but he was yoked in the 90s.
I mean, we talked about it on the show. I think I was watching that 88 series game one, or no, it was the game six of the Mets Dodgers 88 NLCS. And other than Straw and Gibby and Gooden and maybe the Bulldog, there were no major league players on that field. None of those guys, none of those skinny pussies could play professional baseball today. It's not even close. Yeah. It's like you're watching a different fucking game.
I mean, all sports. Anytime they have that argument about you just have to compare teams to their era, because the best team I ever saw was probably the 85 Bears in terms of dominance.
Sure.
And the Bengals would beat them by 70.
Of course. What gets worse with time?
Drive through the line. Get out of here.
Right. It's only better. The players are only better now. There's nothing worse. It's better.
Smoking heaters on the sideline.
Yes,
those guys.
Yes. Fucking Keith Hernandez was smoking them in the dugout. Okay. Couple more. Oh, I think this is our buddy Telly Two Putt. Good guy.
Okay.
Buddy of ours.
Yeah.
Good boy. Do yourself a favor and go to Brian's Instagram story about him and fucking, he's calling everybody kooks on the beach. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But it's Telly Two Putt and I'm pretty drunk and I'm going to.
Good for you.
Try and clear up anything about OnlyFans that I joined.
Oh, let's recap this.
Yeah, Jason, this is pretty funny.
Telly was telling us about two different girls he knows IRL, one of whom he had sex with at least once, asking him to subscribe to their OnlyFans. And also, I believe they said, send Brian the login to those OnlyFans via DM. I think I'm almost positive that's what I heard. And it's, it's people called in, including one woman who referred to herself as the penis connoisseur, saying that I had shamed the OnlyFans community, and not at all.
I was the one making the stink that I just learned about it. But if it's somebody you've already been with, it seems weird that you're going to pay to look at them.
Yeah, you figure you can get those nudes for free. But I've let it be known, I am pro OnlyFans.
This is a gig economy.
Yes. Like, whatever you need to do to make a buck, like, I probably won't subscribe because I just don't do that. But if somebody I knew were to subscribe and were to DM me their login info and let me just peruse a little bit, I would be into that. Let's see what Telly
says. So the business model, I've yet to venture into this world. So the business model is that it's kind of like an a la carte thing where
it's like you like what you see and pay more and you get to see more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like bespoke. It's like, I'm going to do porno, but just for you or, you know, just for my followers.
Request is a live cam or is only fans only?
I think it's all of the above. I think it's any and all. But I don't know. I've never been on OnlyFans. I've never attempted to subscribe to anybody's OnlyFans in my life. Okay. Let's see what Telly's going to explain it to us, I think.
A pansexual girl. I joined it because she was like, hey,
she's hooking up with girls on this website.
I'm into that.
I was like, okay, that's fine.
Yep, she's pan. Okay, do we know the definition of pansexual? It's like more than bisexual.
I mean, I'm all for it. Do whatever you want, but yeah. I only know of two options. Same. I'm confused.
Same. It's a new world for me.
It's undefined, right? It includes everything. Like the derivative pandemic. It is assumed that it's all like worldwide. Right. It's not just Cedar Creek and Zaire.
How about the great Zamfir and his pan flute? Does anybody remember that?
No.
You don't remember the amazing Zamfir playing the pan flute back in the 80s? Gotta get with that. All right. Okay, let's see what Telly has to say.
Another $40 to see her hook up with a girl for 11 seconds.
What?
I didn't do it.
Good for you.
I mean, I already fucked her, yes.
Yeah.
But I was looking for shit I never seen. The shit I tried to see.
Right.
So that's kind of what happened there.
Wow.
The other girl, you got to remember, both of these girls bartend.
Yes.
So one of them worked at my course where I play at all the time.
Right.
So when I say my course is my home municipal court.
I got to be honest. Do not care about any of the shit that Telly's saying right now. Like we know he's a golfer. I don't need the logistics, your course. I don't need the specifics of why you call it your course, but I'm going to let you go. Cause I'm into this OnlyFans stuff.
I belong to two country clubs.
Oh,
but
my God.
I don't play there very often.
Oh, my God.
I belong to one that's in Colorado Springs.
Telly Too Rich. What's this guy's? This guy's flexing all his golf course memberships. We get it. You got money. Nice. You're single.
So I don't play that at all. Maybe one time a year. So that's to clear that up.
Oh, who cares?
But both of them are bartenders.
Okay, I'm into
this
part.
Great girls, great women.
Yeah.
Beautiful, and I want to see the pan chick hook up with the chick. That's why.
Yep, me too.
The one I already saw. That's why I wanted to see that.
Yeah.
The other one, I don't know. I mean, I never saw no fucking on any page.
Right.
I saw a little bit more than you would see on Instagram.
Oh, that's weak.
You know, a titty here or there, maybe yes. You know, a lip here or there.
Whoa.
Nothing. Oh. And I was like, I don't know. This sucks. And I tipped one of the girls, you know, she's one of my good friends.
Sure. Oh my God. I think we got, I accidentally closed it. Hold on. I'm going to try to fast forward to where I was.
I tipped one of the girls, you know, she's one of my good friends. And she was like, hey, you know, I'm bartending through this time. Can you join my OnlyFans? And then can you tip me? And I'm like, yes, I will tip you. And I'm like, hey, send me a video.
Now, hold on. She's bartending. And hear me out, guys. She's bartending. He could just tip her right there. I assume OnlyFans takes a little cut. They take a little haircut off the top. They got to get theirs. That's like Patreon. They get a piece. So the fact that she's saying to Telly in person at the bar where she works, hey, I'm, you know, doing my best here. Can you throw me a few bucks? Or maybe she's saying, oh, she's furloughed probably from the bar is the deal. So she's like, sign up for my OnlyFans so I can get some money. Because I was going to say he could just give her money right there. But I'm neglecting to realize that bars are closed, right? That's my mistake. Okay.
And it went by the wayside. So I never saw it, but I don't know. I mean, they're good people and
yes.
They're trying to make an honest living.
I appreciate that. I'm pro OnlyFans. I'm pro OnlyFans. And he just stops talking like a guy in a movie. He didn't say goodbye or anything.
No goodbye.
Wow. Unbelievable. Okay. One more and then we're going to get to this movie. I know it's a lot of voicemails this week, but I like catching up with everybody. I like that people called in. I want to give everybody their chance to be heard.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Luke from Fort Collins, Colorado.
Okay. Luke's got some fucking pipes on him.
Okay, he does. Colorado State. No, Fort Collins. Is that Air Force or is Colorado State? One of them is there.
Yeah, Colorado State.
I think Colorado State.
Air Force is in Colorado Springs.
Springs, right.
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 It looks like
to
he...
The podcast.
What?
Fort Collins is nice. I went to a nice brewery there made out of an old school.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
His profile pic is Moby, or is that him, the guy with the guitar? Luke and Fort Collins on Twitter?
No, you've looked him up? No.
Yeah, long-time follower of mine.
Oh, really?
Luke and Fort Collins, yeah.
Jason likes to drop in who follows him on Twitter.
Yeah.
There is a direct connection between people who listen to this podcast and have been following me on Twitter for like 10 years.
Yeah. It's that we're all in that kind of world together, Jason. It's fun. Okay. Let's see what Luke has to say.
Off a couple months. I like it a lot. You were talking about your buddy, Telly Two-Putt, and,
that's right. Buddy mine.
You guys are kind of, trying to find the name of the town where you think he lives. The name you're looking for is Fort Collins. It's kind of turned into a bit of a Boulder wannabe.
It's a cool
like
town.
You said, a lot of Tevas,
yeah.
A lot of Tevas. Hacky sacks type of things, a lot of vapes, man buns. Kind of breaks my heart to see it go that way, but that's how things turn out. But hey, appreciate the podcast. About to tip back to Coors Original right now. And thanks for what you do, guys. Take care.
Hey, Luke and Fort Collins, great voice.
When I said it's a cool town, I didn't
mean what's
that.
Up, guys?
Oh, well, yeah, you didn't what?
I didn't mean that aspect of it. I just meant, like, it's a pretty cool place to visit.
Well, I mean, if you're going to Colorado, here's things you're going to see. You're going to see guys wearing Teva sandals.
You are going to see weed places everywhere.
You're going to see people smoking weed. People buying weed. You're going to see puffy Patagonia or North Face vests where they're like, hey, I don't want my arms to get too warm. This is to keep my core warm. Maybe
I never understood vests.
Yeah,
never.
They got the vest on and then they'll have the man bun or they'll have a crooked lid Patagonia cap. That they'll wear like a dad style cap. That's everybody. And they all listen to this white guy reggae band from Denver called The Samples. They all listen to those guys. It's just that's Colorado in a nutshell. Okay, guys.
Could I close the loop on this?
Close it. Yeah. Close loop system.
It's verified. Luke and Fort Collins. He looks like a younger, more attractive Moby. And he's musically inclined. It looks like he posts a lot of his music.
Really?
Does he follow you?
He's followed me for like 10 years.
Ed, come on. Come on, buddy. Okay, so we're here to discuss the 1995 not pandemic film, Outbreak. Let's check out the trailer. If possible.
In a world... jungle. A small monkey is captured, bound for a pet store in America. The animal carries a deadly virus. Now, I know that some of us have doubts about what we're about to do. We'd be less than human if we didn't. But the fate of the nation, perhaps the world, is in our hands. We cannot... We dare not refuse this burden. I'm confident that each of you will do his duty. God forgive us.
Oh!
Your town is being quarantined.
We got 19 dead. We got 100 more infected. It's spreading like a brush fire.
What are you talking about?
If one of them's got it, then 10 of them have got it now. And if one of them gets out of Cedar Creek, we have a very interesting problem.
If that bug gets out of there, 260 million Americans will be dead or dying.
I'm leaving with the team in an hour.
From the heart of a small California town.
Damn it, Sam. I want to save these people, same as you.
To the inner circle of power in Washington.
The most optimistic projection for the spread of the virus is this. 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours.
The greatest medical crisis of all time.
We can't stop it.
Begins.
Try to remain calm.
Many people are dying and are going to continue to die unless we find this monkey.
There will be panic the likes of which we have never seen.
Attention,
Portland residents.
People of Seattle,
citizens of San Diego.
On the screen, it says time to remain calm. Okay, you heard all their voices. You recognized them all. This is Outbreak 1995.
And yes, by the way, for the people who haven't seen the movie that are just going to listen to this podcast, that was Dustin Hoffman, the main character, saying, people will die if we don't find this monkey.
That's right. That's right.
Did Wolfgang Petersen write it or just direct it?
No, he just directed it. Right. It was written by a couple other dudes. Yeah.
Das Boot?
Yeah. Oh, Das Boot.
Yeah, that was his like claim to fame.
Yeah.
And then he did The Neverending Story and Air Force One. It's a Troy, Air Force One, Neverending Story, wow. Das Boot, and Outbreak.
Yeah.
What a career.
It's crazy.
And you know, he since Harrison Ford was in Air Force One, I think Wolfgang thought he could get Harrison for this movie. Harrison Ford turned down Dustin Hoffman's role.
Shut up.
Get off my plane.
Right. Little inside details. Yeah, Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, the aforementioned Morgan Freeman, Kevin Spacey, Cuba Gooding Jr., Donald Sutherland, Patrick Dempsey, McSteamy. Yeah. Yeah, he's important to the movie. And that one guy that was like in the army that always plays a guy in the army in movies. You guys know who I'm talking about? He's like the one that they keep telling to arrest Dustin Hoffman. That guy is always in army movies and he always plays an army guy. Yeah. What's the point of this thing? It's just like what's going on right now. Some shit pops off this time in Africa. But it
starts off. They don't even tell you it's Africa. I think in the beginning it doesn't. Like July 1970 or 67, you see guys fighting in the jungle, so you assume it's some Vietnam related.
Right.
There was a Zaire mercenary camp. What was going on in Zaire?
Yeah. Well, they were doing some special forces shit. And I would like credit. I'd never seen this movie before. And it's like a couple people show. So there's like a field hospital right out there in like a clearing in the jungle.
Yeah.
And a chopper comes in and a couple people in like hazmat suits, which surprisingly the hazmat suits in 1967, much more functional than the modern hazmat suits for some reason. They get off the helicopter and they walk in. They're like, mother of God, like everybody's dying. And I'm like, hey, that's Donald Sutherland inside that thing. I recognize the voice. That's all I want credit for.
Yeah.
But they check it out and they're like, don't worry. We're going to get you we're Americans. We're going to get you the help we need. And then they leave and they call in an airstrike. And let me ask you guys if this seemed a little weird. I'm not really up on the whole how modern warfare works. But it seems to me it might not be the best idea to drop a bomb connected to a parachute.
Yeah, it gives them time to run.
Yeah, you don't want it to land softly.
It's like, well, we'll trick them. Well, if you fire missiles at them, they're not going to have time to run anyway.
Right.
Yeah, it's like adding insult to injury, though. Yeah, they thought it was cargo. They thought that there was help on the way, and village exploded. Now, the reason why they had this scene, they don't tell you right away, but I have a question for you guys. The premise of this movie is that this virus wiped out this entire village, but they were able to get a sample of it because they could hopefully use it as a biological weapon one day.
Yeah. Okay? Yes. See, now, that's not really clear, but yes.
It's strange.
That's
it's strange.
Assumption, right?
But, yeah.
But my mind almost never goes to that point. And I think there's some, there's been some speculation about this Wuhan virus that maybe they created in a lab and all this stuff. And then,
well, there's only speculation by one person. It's been debunked by everyone else.
Right. But if you do like a deep dive on Bill Gates and why people hate Bill Gates, one of the reasons the conspiracy theorists hate Bill Gates is because he's using all of his money to develop these biological weapons. And he wants a vaccine not only to cure Americans, but to like thin out the population, the rest of the world or something. Like there's some like deep-seated like weird shit going on with biological weapons Could you answer this question? When was the last time biological weapons were used? Was this a Syria thing at some point recently?
No.
Well, Assad did it on his own people, right?
Yeah, but those are like chlorine bombs. That's different than those are chemical weapons. Right. Yeah, that's different.
Right. Well, in the movie The Rock, right?
Oh, they were. Yes. Right. I don't remember. Movie? No, we should do that one though. It would be much better. If somebody had suggested that this week, we could have done it this week, but instead somebody suggested Outbreak, which is a dog shit movie. So then they go to their like comeback.
The dead patients, they really do. They just got George Romero to do his zombie makeup on the people.
So that's a through line throughout this movie where they're like, this is how you like you get the virus, and within 28 hours all your organs liquefy and stuff. And I'm like, well, it seems pretty easy to tell who has the virus. It's all the people with the red eyeliner around their eyes. Like you can fucking see them from across the room. You know, they got it. Like it's a very telling appearance for these people. So it flashes to modern times and they're at like some federal building, which I happen to recognize as the Chet A. Holyfield Ziggurat building here. Just as the crow flies, about maybe 8 miles away from where I'm sitting in Laguna Niguel, California. Little something to know in case you want some little details, inner details. And there's like a lab. There's like a biohazard lab, right? And that's where Kevin Spacey's working with they gave him the hairpiece that makes it look like he's going bald.
Why the color?
It was a weird color too. Yeah.
He wanted us to know?
Yeah, it was weird.
To me, it's like so Spacey and Hoffman work for the Army. They're the government version of the infectious disease. Yep. I guess they're the people that would work with Fauci nowadays or whatever. Sure. And then there's the CDC.
Right. They're
two different things, right?
Yes.
Then we get to the point that that Hoffman used to be married to Renee Russo, and we'll get to that later. But I will say this about Spacey. Of all the performances in this movie, I think Spacey does the best. I think he's a typical Kevin Spacey character, just kind of a smart ass, but I think he handles himself pretty well. I think all the other guys
are a good actor, for sure.
Fish out of water, I think.
I would say Kevin Spacey's been really good in a lot of movies. I think for his legendary status, I mean, how many good movies has Hoffman made since like Tootsie? He's in a lot of bad movies.
Yeah. Rain Man was made after Tootsie, right?
Right.
Rain Man.
That was 88.
That was 88.
No, that's what I'm saying. I can't think of one since. He's been in bad stuff. He's become Pacino in that, like, whenever you see him in the movie, you're just like, that's Dustin Hoffman playing whoever. That's Al Pacino playing Hoffa. Like, it's hard to get beyond that. So I don't know if that's it or he just has had horrible choices. Wasn't he Ishtar? He chose Ishtar, right?
And Warren Beatty.
Hold on. I'm going to tell you what he's been in recently. Not a lot. He's got to be 80 years old or close to it.
He's like 5'1", right?
He's little.
Really small.
Yeah. He was in Meet the Fockers.
Okay, there you go.
I Heart Huckabees, that's kind of good. Finding Neverland. Moonlight Mile. The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc. Oh, Wag the Dog.
Wag the Dog, I think, was okay.
Sleepers, that was pretty good. But that was right after Outbreak. Yeah, he hasn't done a lot.
Well, none of these were good. None of those movies you listed were good because of Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
Right. It was like ensemble cast.
Characters in
the, yeah. Yeah. He's a good actor, though. I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from Dustin Hoffman's legend status.
He was.
He and Rene Russo are married. They're getting divorced. They don't really get into the details of why they're breaking up.
But like he meets her on the day she's moving out of their home or something, right?
Yeah.
When you first see them, and it's kind of friendly, but she's just moving out.
She gives him all the pictures though, and that hurts. But who, like, and, who wants a picture of their ex? Nobody.
And the whole fact that we already know what that he's a infectious disease doctor. What's he doing with Rene Russo?
Well, she's also an infectious disease doctor.
But you just don't buy this couple from the get go. And I don't know about you guys, but whenever I see that Rene Russo was casted in any of these movies, late '80s, '90s, I always think to myself, which four A-list actresses passed on this movie before they're like, all right, let's get Rene Russo.
See, I disagree. Yes. I think she was one of the people. One of the actresses from like Major League to Thomas Crown Affair. Yep. She had like a good arc. 12-year run.
She did. I think she got a lot of people's roles.
You seem to think she was bad. I don't think she was a bad actress in a lot of these movies. In the Line of Fire.
She's not bad. She's fine.
I think she's okay.
I think she's a mom. She was a model, right? And she became an actress after being a model. She's just
okay. And then the whole love story part of this, it's like a movie about a disease that kills a lot of people. They try to throw in a lot of gratuitous action to keep people interested. And this love story just falls flat from the beginning. Like, you don't give a shit about this love story from the first second on.
Yeah, but what about when he sees the picture that she gave away of them with the villagers.
Yeah.
The black and white shot. Yeah. It's like, here's 1990. What year is it? 96, 93. What year is this movie?
95
Photoshop, where it clearly is two actors doing something else. And they just tape them to a picture of black
they
children.
They weren't that good at it. But Dustin Hoffman, the reason he's there is he's been called out to a hot zone. There's a level 4 something or other going on, and he needs Rene Russo to watch the dogs, which is kind of like reductive. You know, you could get a kennel. She's also a fucking scientist. She's about to move to Atlanta to work at the CDC. Like, I don't really feel like she should be a dog sitter, but.
Well, what about that? What about the timeline thing right away? The dialogue, it was, okay, I'll watch the dogs, but when are you going to be back? And he says, Thursday night or Friday.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be going to a hotspot where God knows what is happening and how long the outbreak's going to be. Like, how do you put a clock on that?
That's
like,
a good point.
I'll just stay there until noon on Thursday. I got to fly out.
That's a good point.
That's right. And she knows the industry. Right. She knows what it could be facing.
Yeah.
I want to point out, so everybody's coming together. When he leaves and he gets into his army uniform, there is a Me Too convention. You got Dustin Hoffman, Cuba Gooding, Kevin Spacey, and Morgan Freeman all in the same belly of the plane.
Wow. That's great.
Well, it's a different time. And then they're real worried that Cuba Gooding Jr. First of all, they like name off his stats, and he's like, they're like Johns Hopkins, West Point, combat, like they're like, they name off like all this amazing shit that he's done, and they're like, yeah, but you've never been to a viral
they really hammered this home.
Yeah, and because they're worried he's gonna freak out, and then of course he does freak out, which is kind of bullshit.
So unprofessional. Yeah. And to put it in perspective, this is Cuba Gooding before Jerry Maguire. No one knew who the hell this guy was except for that wussy from Boys in the Hood. I don't think anyone knew his name. They just said, oh, that wussy from Boys in the Hood.
Wow.
That was Cuba Gooding. Wussy. But then he does Jerry Maguire and takes off. But this was prior to that.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, when you get the triumvirate of Dustin Hoffman, Kevin Spacey, and Cuba Gooding, there is not a height requirement for this ride because everybody is like 5'5" and below.
They're dead. Cuba Gooding, they're cruising around all these decomposing people. And Cuba Gooding Jr. freaks out and rips off his helmet. And they're like, get him out of here.
It's one thing if he wasn't prepared to see, like a decomposing kid or something.
Yeah.
And so he got sick in his mask, but he's supposed to be so well read that he would know, at least, even if you vomited on yourself, you wouldn't pull off the mask.
Just keep puking in the mask. But then it's fine because like the local doctor that's doctor? been caring, not the witch doctor, but the other guy who's been caring for everybody there. He's like, do not worry. It is not airborne. How the fuck do you know? And they all just believe him. They're like, oh, okay, guys, get the masks off. Oh, okay. Don't just stick Cuba, out, get the gloves.
Fine. Don't Cuba, you're fine. Don't worry
yeah,
about
don't
it.
Even worry about it. This guy right here, who's, we don't know his credentials. We've never seen him before. He probably doesn't even work here as far as we know. He might be just here to loot. He might be here for the gold teeth. He just let us know that it's not airborne. So we're all good. Get your masks off. I thought that was kind of weird.
So basically this whole thing is they return to that Zaire site, right? This is where this virus that happened in 1968, right. They blew up the village for the exact same area. Yep. This virus comes up again. It kills everybody in sight. And the monkey for the first time on film is shown. The monkey that I guess is the source of this entire thing.
Right.
Is taken from that jungle in a boat by Patrick Dempsey.
Well, I was going to say
San Francisco.
Patient Zero is never the monkey. It's Ronald the Lawn Boy Miller. Right. It's always Ronald the person. Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I will say this though. But I want to take issue with what Jason Stewart said, because Kevin Spacey, I think, in this movie is so terrible. He plays it like so camp and over the top, and they're like coming back and they're like writing their reports on the plane, and Dustin Hoffman's dictating to Kevin Spacey, and he's like playing it so gay where he's like say especially, and he's like adverb, he's like that's a tool for a weak mind. It was like so like show tune-y.
He put on that hair, and I think he just wanted to kind of live it up.
Yeah, it was not my favorite Kevin Spacey performance. And then so they land, and Dustin Hoffman, he like doesn't go get debriefed or anything. He doesn't get washed down. He goes straight to a party.
It's established he's an infectious disease doctor that doesn't play by the rules.
That's right. That's right. Yeah,
and by the way, in between what you just described, Donald Sutherland, who was there back in 1968, they compare up on the like this X-ray screen. They compare the virus from 68 and how it looks to the virus of now, and they both determine that it's the exact same thing. So they kind of look at each other like it's back. And then you start to figure out that they kept the virus for biological weapon purposes.
Right. Oh, did we figure that out? Because that wasn't clear to me. But also, I was so annoyed that I couldn't pay that close of attention. And
because Donald Sutherland was like, we got to keep this under wraps. Don't tell Dustin Hoffman. Oh, right. Don't tell anybody because we know what this is already. Let's just make sure it stays in Zaire. Little do they know, a monkey has gotten on a ship to San Francisco.
Right. And also, more importantly, the virus looks a bit like a dong. It's got like two balls down at the bottom. And then it's got like a long, skinny shaft with like a curve on it. It's one of those long, skinny ones, but it's definitely dong-like.
I have a note in front of me that says virus looks like a dong, but I couldn't think of what it was. It was under the microscope. It looks like a dong.
Yeah, it looks like a dong.
Yeah.
And they're like real into it, but of course Donald Sutherland and Morgan Freeman are like, we need people to die from this. Like I get that they want to protect their biological weapon or something, but also I don't really get their, point of view in the fact that they're doing everything to thwart the efforts of the people that are trying to stop this infectious disease from coming to the United States of America, right? Is that just me?
But Hoffman also, it's annoying that he's proven to be right, because throughout the movie, he's like, I just got a feeling. That's the most non-scientist move. You wouldn't just have a feeling. You'd be like, well, these are the facts.
And also they were like, you were wrong in 1989. Well, is that, it's like an abundance of caution, like a bad idea when we're talking about possible pandemics?
Yeah,
but we could all agree on this. It's established pretty early, and he does some overacting too, that Donald Sutherland is like the general of generals. I'm not sure what his exact title is, but he's in charge of everybody in the movie. But he's a sociopathic murderer.
Yeah, like he kind of weird.
He has zero empathy for anybody at all. It's all about this biological weapon. That's all he cares about.
Well, he bombed that original village. He called in the parachute bombing that went down early in the movie.
And let's make him think it's crackers and cheese and blankets, and then the entire village will blow up.
Yeah, but then he immediately is like, throughout the movie, he's like, well, we'll just kill him. We'll just bomb that town. We'll just do, like, he's very content to just murder, like mass murder people, which I feel like you need to get approval for that kind of stuff. I don't think you can just do that.
Right.
Morgan Freeman and Donald Trump Sutherland seem to be really rooting for the virus. Meanwhile, Patrick Dempsey's on that boat. He's a seaman, and he cruises back, and he's like a monkey dealer.
Yeah, he like steals monkeys and gets a pass to get by the security.
Like a rare exotic pet dealer.
Yeah, exactly. And then
the monkey spits in his mouth, and he's not that disgusting. He's like, oh, you scamp, and then spits out of the window.
Yeah.
But like, if a monkey spit in my mouth, I'd be vomiting.
Yeah. So he goes to sell he's come all this way. This guy wants a monkey. He's been trying to get him a monkey. Gets the guy the monkey. They've clearly done business before. He's gotten the wrong sex monkey. You figure you're traveling from Thailand or Africa, wherever they were, and you're bringing a monkey back. Like, you think you would have make sure you had the right monkey. Like, you really only have one shot at that. And then the pet store guy is like, this is the wrong monkey, you knucklehead. And then it bites the pet store guy.
Scratches him.
Yeah, it scratches him. So he's going to die. And then he's like, oh, well, see you later. And then he just goes and lets it run off into the forest.
Yeah. Because the reason why they had to make a distinction of the sex is because the person that ordered it wanted the opposite of the sex that they brought all the way over. And the only thing he could do was let it free. He wasn't entrepreneurial enough to
sell it to somebody else.
Maybe there are other buyers.
Only the Cedar Creek fins and feathers knows what to do with this thing.
I know, like in 95, there was no Craigslist, right? I know this is pre-Craigslist time, but I'm sure you could go to another exotic pet store and squeeze off that. Or who were the big rappers at the time? 1995.
Like
95? Hammer.
What? Hammer. Hammer's right up there in Oakland. He's in Northern California.
Oakland too,
yeah. Swing by Hammer's house. See if he'll make you an offer. What's Mike Tyson up to? He likes exotic pets. Why not hit him up? It's an idea.
But he must have paid a lot out of pocket for this monkey, and he just gives up at the first buyer saying, I can't do it.
No, it's insane.
But also the whole thing that this has just been contained to the town, but where was Patrick Dempsey flying to?
He flies back to Boston.
Right, so why are we assuming that Cedar Creek is the only place it exists?
Yeah, well, they say that when he got off and infected his girlfriend in Boston, that the containment was just in that hospital. It had a little outbreak in Boston.
Everybody. But I like when she's like at the airport, when she greets him at the airport, and she's like, man, you look like shit. And then they do like a big open mouth kiss.
Yes, actually, we have an email about that. Like, he looks... I remember one time I had a cold and I had a dentist appointment, and I called the dentist and I'm like, hey, I have this cold. Do you want me to come in? And they're like, yeah, it's no problem. Imagine getting off a plane in the condition that Patrick Dempsey is in and just fucking face tonguing your chick.
That's feels great.
And then they cut back over to the pet shop, and the guy is like, oh, I'm not feeling so well. Let me lean against all of these fish tanks.
He takes out the fish. All the tropical fish. Dean, no longer in Omaha, wrote us an email, and he said, number one, McDreamy looks and feels like death, but mouth fucks his girlfriend with his tongue in the airport. Yes.
I mean, he passes out like maybe 5 seconds after the mouth kiss.
Yes. And two, he says, maybe make those hazmat suits out of something other than grocery bags. Again, like the hazmat suit technology could have been a lot better. They seemed very easy to pierce, considering you really don't want that to get on you. You might want to make them out of some better material.
One of the big parts of the movie is that Kevin Spacey gets it caught on something. I'm thinking the maker of the suit should have thought, maybe we should make a suit that it's not easily, if you get caught on something, that it'll just rip out and kill the person inside of it.
Yes.
Where was the location of the guy who was like messing with the blood work?
Okay,
and he just sprayed it all over the room.
That was back in San Francisco, right?
No. Patrick Dempsey, he goes to the hospital, Jimbo, as he's called. He goes to the hospital, and then like the tech in the lab who's like handling his blood, he's got it in like one of those spinning things or something. The vial explodes blood.
Yeah, he didn't have a lid on it?
Right. All over his face. Like he gets a blood bukkake.
Like some of the most clumsy work you could ever see by a doctor or a nurse.
And then what's
they should have played Benny Hill music as he's spinning that blood everywhere.
Also, Patrick Dempsey's character is called Jimbo, by the way, which is like
not a Jimbo.
No, Jimbo is like your 56-year-old woodshop teacher.
He's very, you know, weaselly.
Yeah.
And they totally just when Dempsey and his girlfriend are in the hospital, they totally just let him go inside of a plastic bag, essentially, because he's bleeding out of his eyes. She's bleeding out of everything. Usually in a hospital, you're kind of wrapped up and they're just letting everything go.
Yeah. And so Rene Russo comes up from the CDC with her team. And then Patrick Dempsey dies. And the whole team's like, well, I'm not doing the autopsy. And the other guy's like, fuck no, I don't do autopsies. Fuck doing autopsies. They're from the CDC. And then one old guy with shaky hands is like, I guess I'll do it.
Trembles McGillicuddy comes up.
This is how the Centers for Disease Control, don't you have a designated autopsy guy? You know you're going to be dealing with a body when you get there. They can all just back out of autopsying. It's crazy.
So once they determine, like the CDC determines this has happened in Boston, and then they get some cases from the Bay Area. Once it's determined that there is like a hotspot, Dustin Hoffman is told that he's going to Arizona, which is basically like they're flying rubber dog shit out of Hong Kong. Right. Like they just. They want him far out of the way because he's one of those guys that he might be reckless and he might be all in it for himself, but he usually solves the case.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we're skipping over. This thing wouldn't have gone viral except for the blood face guy from the lab. He decides to go to the movies that night with his girlfriend.
But isn't it like a cartoon? I was trying to look. There is humor too in Cape Fear. They're watching Problem Child, where he's laughing maniacally.
Yeah.
But that was like intentional. I think they just didn't want to pay the rights, and they just took like some old 30s cartoon while they're all watching. It does.
Yeah.
I'm watching it right now. It's some kind of cartoon, and this was actually one of the one of the more interesting parts of the movie, in that. It's very mid-90s technology-wise, but they show what happens with the airborne virus once he coughs. And it starts going in and out of people's popcorn, in and out of people's mouths and everything.
That scene made me feel uncomfortable in this current climate.
But the guy, he basically Marion Barbered it, where he gets up. And he's not fucking turning down contact with anybody. He walks down the row and he fucking coughs directly on everybody sitting in the row. He comes out in the lobby and he fucking grabs an usher, coughs all over
his mouth once.
Yeah, he's just fucking, he's looking for the contact wherever he can find it. He coughs and he works on everybody there.
He's a doctor. He's a doctor.
To cover his mouth. Then again, he's a doctor that plays the, you know, the spin art where you just let the things splatter everywhere. And like, look at this plate. It looks so cool. That's what he essentially did for.
And then meanwhile, then everybody in that you know, we've learned from the witch doctor that this is not an airborne virus. Meanwhile, he coughs it directly into everybody's lungs that he sees, and then he heads, then he dies or falls over, and then immediately we have an outbreak because everybody in the theater gets it, and for good reason, they've been coughed on by a maniac.
Yes. He ran into everybody.
Yes.
I'm sure Super Lee's going to like that Marion Barber reference. Yes.
So they show the hospital getting overwhelmed with a bunch of Cedar Creek residents, as we've seen many times in the last 6 or 7 weeks. Overwhelmed hospitals, not enough beds for patients. This was one of those hit home moments.
Yeah, ventilators.
You know what also hit home? When right before Hoffman is like, all right, I'm going to where it's at. He's at home and he's in the most mid-90s scene of all time. He's drinking an iced beer.
Yeah, oh, I know. Yeah. And it's like a 22 ounce, but yeah, it's like a Bud Ice. Yeah.
But I do like the fact that his commanding officer in this whole chain of command tells him you're going to Arizona. There's something in Arizona. And you're going to go there.
Hantavirus, Four Corners disease.
He walks out of the office and he just books a flight to San Francisco.
No, he tells the dispatcher or whatever that he's like, actually, this flight's going to San Francisco. And he's like, so don't even call. Just make it happen. And he like Jedi mind tricks in him into letting him take a plane.
That's right. He gets the pilot to just change courses. Yep. And also, go to a different city.
In the overwhelmed hospital. And I understand these days everybody knows to wear masks. People inside the hospital knew to wear masks.
Yeah.
In the 90s. Yeah. Nobody's wearing a mask.
No, nobody. It's crazy. So then they go. He heads over to Cedar Creek, and like the army's there because there's an outbreak at Cedar Creek where he tried to sell where the monkey is.
Well, this is where I said it's realistic.
Yeah.
Did you hear those people? The people by the gate? No. We have rights. We should be allowed out. We should go outside.
Well, also, like, why are there tanks? Like, the army's there and they have
guns.
They have like 50 cal machine guns. They got armor. And I'm like, hold on. Like, who are you using that on? Like, you're not being invaded.
And helicopters ready to come down and strike.
Many.
This movie, you could tell that they had like lots of like extra budget, and because they're like, this is a pretty boring movie with a lot of dialogue. It's a disease that you can't see. Just throw in as much gratuitous like action as possible. Like the pet store owner, like falling into a fish tank. And then they utilize like this, these rebels in their trucks, like these guys that like live on compounds and shit, trying to leave Cedar Creek. They had the freaking chopper helicopter with missiles getting this armed, in the truck's way, and they fired on them. Yep. They fired on citizens and trucks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right. No, but the firing on them is ridiculous. However, those guys in the Bronco, like demanding, well, hell with this. We're militia men. We're getting out of here. That is absolutely what's going on right now.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. So – what else happens? They're beating the shit out of the citizens.
All right, but it's determined at this point. Morgan Freeman and Donald Sutherland basically tell you what's going on here. They have the vaccine from the original disease back in 68. But because it's a biological weapon, they are not going to give it to the town of Cedar Creek. And this is when Donald Sutherland hatches this plan. Easier to wipe out an entire city than to give out this biological weapon.
Right. The E1101 or something. They have the antidote that they can use, but they choose not to because they would just rather bomb American citizens.
Well, that, and also they're going to have to use that to cure all of Boston because Patrick Dempsey definitely didn't just get his girlfriend sick.
No.
So you're not buying that thing was contained.
No.
No.
Did you see him when that kid almost ate his cookie?
Yeah.
He was already spreading tons of germs.
Yeah, that whole flight is just they all have it. So the monkey's on the loose, right? And What else?
This is when Spacey has his scene, right?
Right, right. So, Dustin. He's like, Dustin Hoffman.
Got a case of the Willies. You ought to call him the Sams. What?
There was this guy, Albert Einstein, and he was like a patent clerk somewhere. Like, he worked at the fucking post office, and he had no access to a lab or anything. And he wrote a paper, and I don't remember what the paper called, but it completely revolutionized the world of physics. He just sat down and wrote a paper. What Einstein did was much less impressive than what Dustin Hoffman does in this movie by himself, because he's not really doing any studying or learning. He's just going on hunches, and every single one of his hunches is exactly right. Correct. So he's like, I got this thing figured out. It's a monkey. And you're like, wait, how do you know that? He's like, I just know. Don't worry. I got it.
Right. The mayor of the town is played by one of the all-time movie pieces of shit who didn't play a piece of shit here. J.T. Walsh.
Oh, I saw. Yeah. Oh, he's the mayor?
Or something. He's like, these are not numbers. These are people. Yeah. Like, he was doing that routine. And I was thinking, this is the first time I've seen him not be a complete piece of shit. Because between him, Paul Gleason,
yes,
yeah. William Atherton,
right,
they own pieces of shit for like a 15, 20-year stretch.
I think J.T. Walsh might have died like right after this movie came out.
He died. No, he died right after the other Spacey movie where he was the villain, Negotiator, Sam Jackson.
Right. That's right.
Dustin Hoffman has to go inside the hospital to see what the disease is doing. They realize at that point it's airborne. Rene Russo flies out from Boston. So you have this like really dumb, awkward thing where the ex, he's got to work with the ex and he still loves her and nobody gives a shit about that plot line. And at that point, at somewhere along the way, right, Rene Russo or Kevin Spacey like gets his suit trapped or caught.
Yeah, he's.
That's when he said, gives him, and she wanted to know what was wrong. He goes, just gave me the willies. They should have called it the Sams. What does that mean?
I don't know. Yeah, that is kind of weird. Yeah, it like he gets his air tube caught on a piece of equipment and it just like totally tears out the back of his suit. Like, is what are these things made of? Like, you have to expect that might happen.
And this whole time, by the way, Donald Sutherland finds out that Hoffman just redid the flight plans and he flew into San Francisco or the Bay Area. And Donald Sutherland says he needs to be arrested. And so Dustin Hoffman spends the rest of the movie trying to avoid his own army from arresting him, avoid his own boss, Morgan Freeman, from doing so, because Morgan Freeman's caught in between. Dustin Hoffman just found out what this is. We need time to figure it out so that we could save people. And Donald Sutherland's saying, no, we're taking out the city and arrest that guy.
Because he gets off on murdering American citizens. That's his thing.
I forget the timeline. When does Dustin Hoffman go like Indiana Jones and get on that Korean ship?
Yeah, I mean, that's like towards the end, right? Right before the the chopper decides to get in front of the bomber.
Yeah, that's later. Rene Russo stabs herself in the finger with a scalpel or something or a needle. Now she's got it. So both Kevin Spacey and Rene Russo have it. And Dustin Hoffman has a hunch. So he and Cuba Gooding Jr., who's apparently also a pilot, go steal a helicopter and get in a helicopter
chase. And he's now badass. Yeah. He was vomiting on himself in the beginning. Now he's like, "Yeah, I'm a take charge guy. I'm gonna do this."
But just think about this. He somehow figures out which ship had the monkey. Yeah,
because
they're just gonna fly out into the middle of the ocean to find this one ship.
Because the chubby lady that looks like the other lady from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah, well, was it her?
It looks like Edie McClure's. But it wasn't her.
Yeah, she's like,
and she implies that she's fucking the Coast Guard.
She goes, "I'm fucking a guy in the Coast Guard. He can tell you where the ship is." And then they just cruise out there in the fog, in the middle of the ocean. And just pull up on a freighter, and then 60-year-old Dustin Hoffman's ass dives out the side of a fucking helicopter onto a ship.
And the Korean ship has like 30 extras from the movie Gung Ho on it.
Yeah, they're all there. And all the guys.
By the way, they make this big ordeal about how he's supposed to get on the ship, and he ends up jumping into a lifeboat because I guess that's softer.
Yeah.
They never explained how he got back on the moving helicopter.
Because Cuba just waves after he drops him off. Yeah. He's like, all right, see ya.
Yeah, I'll just. And does that thing have unlimited gas in it? Like, they flew out in the middle of the ocean. So they figure out. Oh, there's a helicopter chase, right?
Well, no, they don't. He's on the ship, and then they go and see that where the doctor slept, and he kept Polaroids of a monkey above his
monkeys,
bed.
The monkeys he likes to fuck. He's like, I have them. I keep pictures right here, so when I go to sleep, I can jerk off to these monkeys I want to fuck.
Let's just be honest, right?
Yeah, he's fucking that monkey. Yes, I'm being honest.
Polaroids above your bed.
No,
They go to the bunk of one of the shipmen, right? And if you were into monkeys and stuff, would you take a picture of the monkey and put it up underneath the bed, underneath the bunk atop of you and look at it?
Oh, like, yeah.
There's just something very strange about that.
Oh, he loved that monkey for sure.
That's how they found who the carrier was. They found who the source, the monkey that was the source of this, potential pandemic. And it was a complete random, like needle in the haystack.
It's insane.
Adventure to find this. So now they know who the carrier is. Now they just need to find one monkey in an entire forest area.
But we also can't, the pet store scene, he was out of the cage for 3 seconds and he immediately infected the pet store owner. He had already spit in Ronald Miller's mouth, and his funk banana gave it to the other monkey.
That's right.
And we're supposed to expect that he's been in the forest for, I don't know, a week.
Yeah. He's been in the forestry.
Yeah.
And he's been in the forestry and he hasn't done anything. He hasn't infected any other being.
No, he's best friends with that little girl, but
the mom was totally cool with it. Yeah. Oh yeah. My child plays with a monkey.
And meanwhile, Dustin Hoffman and Cuba Gooding Jr. have become like buddy cops at this point. Like they're like doing slapstick and they're shooting the thing with a dart and they're tripping over each other. And it takes a weird turn. But
can we talk about the scene where they take the Polaroid and they just intrude into a news station in Cedar Creek as they're on the air? So you have two people in hazmat suits or military garb or whatever they were wearing storming into a live studio while news anchors are on the air.
Yes.
And Hoffman shows the picture of the monkey and says, if you have seen this monkey, please call blah, blah, blah. Like, could there be like a more hopeless effort to try to find something? Like, if you've seen a monkey,
right?
I know you have this forest of trees around you.
So this is like the news at noon. How many people are watching TV?
what if he got up there with the picture and he's like, hey, I'm Dustin Hoffman. I'm sorry to break in here, but I just want you guys to know my beef today is the ends of bread. Can you believe they make these bread loaves and on the ends they have these end pieces? Who wants these fucking end pieces? Just like not have them in there. Just throw them away. Nobody's going to eat these end pieces of bread. Like that's if that movie had taken this. If he got up and he's like, how come Paul McCartney and John Lennon, they're singing in the same microphone? Like they're the Beatles. They're the biggest band in the world. They can't get two microphones. They just have the one microphone.
How about the mom? The mom, when she hears the report, they're like, have you seen this monkey?
She drops the plates.
And the mom, no, but before she drops the plates, what caused her to drop the plates? She looks over and her daughter has the most rudimentary stick figure picture of her and a monkey. Yes. And she's like, that's it. Yes. Like,
It's got to be that one monkey. Has to be that monkey.
Then the buddy cops show up. They bumble their way into darting the monkey, and Dustin Hoffman's like, "We found the host." How the fuck does he know? He's going to run some tests on it? You don't know. You're just guessing.
Let's slow it down a little bit. That scene altogether. Dustin Hoffman and Cuba Gooding drive to the house with the little girl who's had this pet monkey with a killer virus inside of it.
Yeah, they have no suits on.
And
hey, Mom, do you mind if we use your child as bait?
Right. But it's not like they had the monkey in a cage. They just knew that if she went outside, this one monkey in an entire forest was going to come to see her. They gave her some food and they basically compelled the parents, like, a lot of people are going to die. I mean, step up here and put your 6-year-old out there to hold out food for a monkey. That
is the virus. Most contagious thing ever.
Yeah. Right. So that we could try to shoot a dart at this monkey, not hitting your daughter, hit this monkey before it bites your daughter.
Yeah.
That was the plan. Insane.
And you know, when the daughter's like, "Well, promise me you won't hurt the monkey." And he's like, "Oh, no, we won't." You know that monkey was cut into 800 pieces.
Of course. It's too dangerous. But they are flying in the helicopter and they're like, "Oh, the little guy's sleeping pretty well back there." And they have it like wrapped up in a little blanket, like just thrown behind the seat. Like, is that the same? What if it did come back to wake up from the darting and he's just bit you on the fucking neck? Then they get in an insane helicopter chase. It's just beyond words.
It lasted about 5 minutes longer than it should have. Yep. And it was about 5.5 minutes.
They throw him off.
That little girl is going to get murdered by a mountain lion eventually because the mom just keeps letting her just go into the woods. Yeah. Like, no big deal. Yeah.
And then Dustin Hoffman's like, "Hey, I noticed there were some missiles on this helicopter." And Cuba Gooding Jr. is like, "Yeah, sure are." And he's like, "Why don't you just shoot a couple into those trees?" So he shoots Tomahawk missiles. A, he starts a forest fire for sure. Two, what if somebody's out there camping? What if somebody's got their little tent pitch?
That little girl. Yes. When you're making an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. They don't care about human life.
Then they get into a game of chicken. So Donald Sutherland's scrambled a bomber, which looked to me like a C-17, which is a cargo plane, not a bomber. It had no fucking bombing characteristics. You would probably scramble an A-10 Warthog or even a fucking fighter jet to drop the bomb. You wouldn't use a cargo plane to do that job.
Military dork.
It's a C-17.
Parachute bomb can go up at any.
That's true.
Remember, they're not firing missiles.
Right. They did drop a parachute bomb. So somebody could have pushed it out the back, I guess.
Before you describe the climactic scene of the movie, which is basically the end, I think you need to kind of catch everybody up here. In the meantime, like Donald Sutherland has gotten the go ahead from the cabinet to go ahead and blow up this city. There's a timer on when the city is going to get blown up. Everybody who is relevant and on our side is going to get out of town, and we're just going to keep these people in there to blow it up. Now, Rene Russo, they're trying to figure out what's going on with the monkey and the vaccine and everything. She pricks herself with a needle.
Oh yeah, this is the
most clumsy set of doctors you've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah,
where you have her pricking herself through her glove.
No, she's been dying, and also I mentioned this 10 minutes ago. She's been dying, and she's continuing to.
She's hanging out with Spacey now.
She's infecting everybody in the hospital. She's not told anybody that she's dying of the disease, and you can clearly see she is because she's got the red eyeliner like everybody else.
She looks like a zombie.
Yes, it's insane. But alas, the day is saved. The Dustin Hoffman in the chicken game with the C-17 is able to call the pilots and be like, look, you guys got to do the right thing here. I can save these people. I have a hunch. My hunches have been right before. And they fucking go out and they just drop the bomb into the San Francisco Bay. And they're like, oh, sorry, Donald Sutherland, we missed.
Morgan Freeman, even though he... the entire movie gives the indication that he's going to side with Donald Sutherland because Donald Sutherland is his commanding officer.
Right.
He gives Dustin Hoffman a clue as they are in the chopper saying something along the lines of, we all know by code whatever that if something is in front of a bomber, it cannot complete its mission. No, which I don't understand
rules.
That one.
That's the rules.
Like, why not? Why can't they just go around just within their way and bomb the city?
Fly above it. It's just like a bomber can fly a lot higher than a helicopter. Yeah. Just go over it. Shouldn't be a problem.
So Hoffman has the monkey, and then they were able to turn that into a cure immediately
in like minutes.
Right. Like she bounces back. She gets that energy like Hulk Hogan used to get when he was almost passed out.
Yes.
And he starts shaking his arm. She's perfectly fine. The red eyeliner's gone.
Gone.
But Hoffman takes an unnecessary risk before they even give it to him.
Takes off his helmet.
Takes off his mask.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't know if it's going to work.
Yes. It's crazy. Well, but he's telling you he's in love.
Right.
He's like, we're in love again.
If she's going to die, he's going to die. Yeah, it was one of those things. But
I mean, from his perspective, I get it because he's never pulling anything of that caliber. Yeah,
that's a good piece.
Of course, somehow Hoffman finds out along the way that the I keep calling it a vaccine. What is it? Antidote? Whatever it is.
Yes.
That the government's been sitting on this. Yeah. That they had it and they chose to blow up the village or town instead of use this stuff.
They determined that there was two different viruses, the old one and the new one. And they could have used the virus that they already had or whatever.
And isn't part of like the narrative like today, if you were to watch the news, that vaccines or even therapeutics take like months and months to not only like test and make sure they work.
Yeah.
But also to produce. They take a lot. Fauci right now is like, we're gonna spend hundreds of millions of dollars on a vaccine we don't know works, but you have to do that in order to speed up this process.
Yep. Right. And then he may have used the only supply on Rene Russo.
Right. Just to save her. Yeah, exactly. Well, so luckily Rotten Tomatoes agrees with us because this movie has a 59 on Rotten Tomatoes, which is way too high, but still rotten. 56 with the audience. How much money did this piece of shit make? Let's see here.
I bet it did well.
It's not
the star power.
Whoa.
I bet it did well.
Whoa. I remember it being a big hit. Trivia, Harrison Ford, we already knew. Mel Gibson.
He was probably doing Ransom around that
he
time.
He seems like the kind that would be interested in experimenting on human beings. And Sylvester Stallone.
That would have been a different movie.
Oh, it would have been way better. We're offered the leading role of Colonel Sam Daniels. They all turned it down. That's when Dustin Hoffman got it.
Who's a monkey?
Yeah. Let's see. How much did this thing make?
It made a bunch of money.
Yeah. Budget, 100. $50 million gross. USA gross $67 million worldwide, $189 million. Massive hit. A lot of questions, but it is kind of a confusing movie. It's really stupid. It's really long. It's horrible. I mean, it's really bad. I wouldn't suggest it to anybody.
I read a review that was written just a couple years ago, and it kind of sums it up in this little paragraph. It's a cheesy movie filled with all the stereotypes, cliches, and scientific inaccuracies you'd expect from a 90s disaster flick.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else to add, Ed Daly?
No, that's good. We've done it.
Jason Stewart, did you get all your zingers in?
Are you guys going to concede that this was a much better, much funnier review than you thought it would be?
Oh, I think it's a good review. I have no doubt that we'll put together a good review.
Yeah.
Any of these movies.
Yeah. It was real shitty to have to sit through, though, I would say. But
of all the unbelievable things, still the most unbelievable is the village doctor who, like, kind of talks to the witch doctor. Yeah. And he's like, no, it's fine. It's not airborne. And not airborne. Look at that guy's teeth. You're like, I don't know if I want to trust this guy.
Yeah, and they immediately take off their masks. They're like, okay, okay, guys, we're good. We're good. This local villager with no credentials here who's been caring for these sick people might have given him this thing. We're just going to take his word for it. We're good to go here. All right, guys. Great job all the way around. For special guest Jason Stewart, for co-host Ed Daly, my name is Brian Beckner. This has been episode 319 of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. We will see you next week.
Bye.
The Lifestyle's Baller Podcast, getting bigger and not smaller. Broadcasting weekly, that's what we do, with Easy Ed Daly and a man Jay Stu and Brian Beckner, quick to dissect the week in sports and culture and whatever. Plus, you know there's Kate with a C, but she's known as Fancy Pop to you and me. Talking loud, covers conundrums, my brothers, reviewing some movies and shows and others. Top podcast, man, no one is above us. 5-star, even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot, man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man, it really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the Lifestyle's Baller. And you know the show is so flawless. TBLS, the Lifestyle's Baller. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the Lifestyle's Baller. And you know the show is for all us. TBLS, the Lifestyle's Baller.